hello and welcome to the lineup. And you know what, Eric? This lineup can hit with runners in scoring position.
Whoa,
it's the podcast from the True Blue LA blog empire. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I've seen the numbers. They're growing exponentially. It's just a matter of time before we're like, you know, it's like us, Joe Rogan,
Can we pick a different Radiolab? Us and Radiolab. How about that?
Okay, that's fair. But yeah, obviously we wanted to wait until the Gold Glove finalists were out, and we have a lot of Tyler Anderson talk coming. So that's what we got for you this episode.
And can we do you think we'll be players in the big Ira Glass free agent market?
So
or trade market? And you know, we might have to give NPR something.
Speaking of not knowing that was a thing, this is breaking
news. It's not a thing. I'm just trying to figure out to grow the podcast.
Did I miss a thing?
No. Break. I'm going to tweet it at.
My voice, we're both like going through something like cough wise, voice wise. So we're not quite at that point where we can't. And this is the True Blue LA ASMR hour. You know, like we can't quite hit that level. Maybe we need to bring him on board to get us there. I think that's the right move.
Well, we're going to try to do that while regaling you, listener, in the sad tale of the 2022 Dodgers postseason. And then, you know, to cheer us up, we'll have questions from Craig, both of those after this. So 0-20, that's quite a streak.
Yeah, and there's a couple ways to look at it. Yes, incredible, like insanely long hitless streak. Like you figure you're going to run into like a duck snort here and there. You would have thought like somehow they could have gotten, they could have, the way they were going, they could have gotten a hit with runner in scoring position that somehow didn't score a run, you know, or something. It was like a single to deep short that no one could score on or something like that. But also the other part of that is that it was not the longest postseason drought with runners in scoring position in Dodgers history. They had two higher. I think one was 66, which is understandable because they scored two runs in game one against the Orioles and then got shut out the rest of the way and got swept. And then in 81, I don't remember which game it was. I'm assuming it was the Astros series because they fell down 0-2. Which we previously talked about, I think, two episodes ago in one of our sort of NLDS preview-y type trivia things. I have no track of time at this point, but it's wild. 0-20 is a lot.
So where'd you watch these two? Because we recorded after game two, so the only two games we have to talk about.
Yeah, so I was home just watching from home. Watching on TV and you know, writing about it from there. So I know we were both at game one at Dodger Stadium. You were still in Los Angeles, right, for game two and just watched it?
I was en route to San Diego. Okay.
So, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is here is the Dodgers were 1-0 with you in attendance.
I was in the city where the home to the winning team.
And they were 0-3 without you in attendance. So I think what I can glean from that is is that everyone's looking for someone to blame for the exit for the Dodgers. I think we found it. It's clearly Jacob Burch. I don't know. How do you respond to these charges, Jake?
It's fair. That's all I can say. It's just absolutely fair.
Yeah, it was one of those where, like, I don't know, like... It's always weird.
I was still in LA, but I wasn't at the game regardless. Yeah. So now I cannot remember. Hold on. No, I was in route. I apologize. Days are blurring together.
Playoff losses are so weird because you're like so embedded in like whatever the series you're in or whatever. And it's like day to day, you're like, got to do this, got to do this, got to do this. And then like when you lose, it's like the ripcord gets pulled and you're just, oh, by the way, season's over. See you next year. Like, it just happened, even though obviously it was best of five. So they're down 2-1. They're up 3-0 in game four. And, you know, you can sense, okay, if they win, they go back to Dodger Stadium. They have the advantage again with, it's going to be Julio Urias. And I believe it was going to be Yu Darvish on short rest, which, again, facing Yu Darvish, never good. never easy, but facing him on 3 days rest is much better than normal Yu Darvish. And, you know, or I guess the other option would have been Mike Clevinger again, or some combo of Clevinger and Sean Manaea, who the Dodgers really handled those guys. So
this is something I kept coming
pointing out, right?
Yeah, like, I kept coming back to is that if the Dodgers get a hit in any of those 20 at bats,
3 or 4, right? Yeah,
in any of that 20, there's a good chance there's a game 5, and one at bat doesn't change and I don't think would change my perception of, boy, is this team underperforming. And yet we still would have gotten game 5. So the fact that, you know, they were at whatever percentile of expectations for this team and they still almost made it to game 5 goes to show how good this team is. But on the flip side, shows how disappointing it is.
Yeah. And so I guess we could go right into that. So leading off on Monday morning, with a day to sort of process, I sort of went over like all the, you know, sort of the various layers of how they sort of did poorly. And we can go over that a little bit, I guess. But I guess I wanted to ask, because I was struggling with this myself. Is this year a bigger disappointment than 2019?
I think they're different kinds of disappointments.
Sure,
Watching AJ Pollock bat in 2019 possibly more frustrating than the general running scoring position thing. This was a better team. The expectations were higher. It was a divisional rival.
Yeah,
when the Nationals won, I rooted for them afterwards. There were so many players on that team I was really happy to see win. But on the other side, 2019 was a game 5 at home.
Yeah,
I know I think there's some justified second guessing what Dave Roberts could have done this year, but compared to, like, you
he
could
didn't
argue
bring in Kershaw, with 3-1 lead or whatever,
or Joe Kelly for another inning, egregious
that year. Hell, it was one of many that sort of steeled us to this year's Craig Kimbrel ride, because we knew how, like, you know, he. The sort of iconic closer is the closer till he's not, and they've shown like they'll go away from them in the postseason, and that's what they did with Kenley that year. And then Joe Kelly gets one inning, he's going out for a second inning.
I get that the optics of this game with the Almonte throwing the one pitch and then taking it out were worse, but like he was putting good relievers in, right? And I think you can absolutely argue that Phil, like, it is unlikely that the ninth was going to get more high leverage than the middle of the seventh in game 4. You should bring in your best reliever. But Phillips wasn't the best reliever in the playoffs up to that point. And Almonte and Kainley had both looked really, really good, as had Vesia. So to me, they weren't egregiously bad decisions, even if I think you can argue they were wrong.
I think, too, like, so if you're – like looking at that, you know, they mixed and matched, right? Evan Phillips was first out of the box in game 1 with a lead. He got the sixth inning because that's when the big boys were up, right? But then through the next few games, like, so the first two people they brought in the 8th, the Padres scored 5 in the 7th and off 3 different relievers. But it started with 7-8-9 in the 7th. So they bring in Tommy Kainley, who to that point had retired all 6 he had faced in the series with 4 strikeouts. And the first of those was going through Kim, Machado, and Soto in game 2, striking them all out. And then the guy they brought in next, Yency Almonte, when things got dicey, they were still leading when they brought him in, but the Padres, you know, were threatening. Yency Almonte to that point, 2 appearances, 5 batters, 5 strikeouts, including going through Soto and Machado in the first of those. So it's like, it's not like they were bad choices, right? Like,
and again, if you want to say someone would go with Phillips instead of El Monte, sure. That's arguable, but to me, it's at least either way is defensible. And certainly with potential metrics that, you know, are proprietary probably to the Dodger system. So there's an argument there, whereas I can't imagine the argument for leaving Brandon Kershaw in and then bringing him back out after sitting down and then bringing Joan Kelly back out for another inning. So that was, to me, a factor on, like, just comparing the two. I don't know which I'd consider worse. The last thing I would say about this game four, and this is not why the Dodgers lost, but it made it all the more painful, is it was just an atrocious zone the entire game.
Oh, yeah.
Not a reason they lost. No, I'm not trying to say, it just, like, it made the misses so much more painful because, you know, like, you were living and dying by every pitch.
Yeah, he was kind of all over the place there.
I think it was ended up being like a one-run favor on the ump scorecard. Not that that's the end-all be-all.
I have a weird thing where I think I reflexively, like, my brain shuts off with that because the, like, prevalence of, like, ump scorecards and all that. And, like, I don't know. Sometimes our game threads, and it's not to just pick on, like, True Blue Elevators. It's online. It's everywhere. There's, like, so much devoted to just whining about the home plate umpire that I almost tune it out. It's impossible to really, but, like, I think I just sort of shut it off to where I probably, to my discredit, I ignore it, perhaps, when you know, sometimes it is. I think usually the story is how the players react, right? It's not like, I don't want to sit here and write a game and be like, well, definitively saying, well, this umpire was crap, you know, or something like that. I'm not that I'm going to use those words, but, like, yeah. So that's certainly a part of it. So I was thinking, like, the one, I'm of two minds on this. The 2019 was, like, devastating, but it also, no fault to that year, it just came at a time when it carried the weight of the Dodgers having not won a title in, like, three decades. So, So, Kershaw was so despondent after 2019 Game 5, he gave up the tying home runs, and he was just like, whatever, everyone says in the playoffs is true, you know, it's all true, like, whatever. He was just like, he just seemed done, right? Like, not, you know, done with that moment, right? And so this, obviously, because the Dodgers won the title, it, like, I don't know if it takes the sting out of it, but, like, it certainly was still shocking, like, They won 111 games and they didn't win a series. Like, that's bad, right? But like you said, like, I don't know. Like, no one ever wants to hear this, but you're right. Like, they really were really close to getting a game five. Obviously, it didn't work out. You got to win to get there, and they didn't. So they deserve, like, scorn in that regard.
I also wonder how this is a factor I've noticed. I have been using Twitter less and less, certainly as someone actually tweeting, but I also have a more curated list on, like, trying to keep my focus, so it's not a big distraction. But how online you are, I think, may affect this, because if you're a very online person in this season, you are getting sick of the Mickey Mouse ring arguments. You're getting sick of, especially from, say, Padres fans online. And so this one might have stung for similar reasons to they hadn't won a title in forever. This is the best chance to win with 162 games. And that's a big argument for being a little less online generally.
Yeah. I
know you curate via the mute button primarily, I believe, or maybe even block button too, probably.
Mute more than block. I used to block, but usually it was like if someone was nasty or something.
To your credit, the fact that you didn't remember the umpire, you're doing a good job of that. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. But but you're right. Like, the online is, for just before I go on a little bit, I will say anyone who brings up, like, Mickey Mouse ring, they're dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. Like,
right.
I know you know that. Like, I just want to point that out. Like, that's a stupid argument. Like, it falls flat on its face, like, when put up to any scrutiny. You just don't, like, the beauty of, like, you're saying being offline is great.
It allows you to
ignore those people. Like, you know, like, you don't have to,
being more and more online makes it more difficult to not care what other people think.
Yeah.
This game's more enjoyable if you avoid the opinions of those whom you don't care about.
So speaking of being online or perhaps being
don't know where this is going, but I'm excited. No,
for being or being offline and getting a newspaper.
Oh no.
I found the reaction to the Dodgers loss just bizarre, man. Like over the top, like bad or like just weird. Like there, and it's not just the Dodgers series. So the same day the Braves lost to the Phillies in four games, they won 101 games. The Braves did. So you, the NLCS is the 87 win Phillies and the 89 win Padres. And people are like, we're freaking out. Like, so in fairness, the LA Times letters editor, and I don't have his name in front of me, wrote a column about like the like being a Dodger fan and like the weirdness of the format. The article itself, you know, fine. Like nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. The tweet from LA Times Sports or whoever like sent it out first did that guy no favors at all because it was like, is the Dodgers loss proof that MLB should cancel the postseason and just award the best record?
I feel like this came out before game four. Am I misremembering
that? You might be right. Yeah. But I was just like,
which didn't help that they, when they then lost.
Right. Exactly. But there were so many, like there's so many people like, oh, but,
so, and then, okay. So oh, I'm, yeah. I'm going to, so as a fan frequently of teams that are awesome in the regular season and then lose in the playoffs, whether it's the Colts or the Pacers or the Dodgers, what I have said before is that I wish, and I think you would agree with this, but we'll see.
Yep.
I wish there was, it was, this aspect was closer to European soccer in that there are big knockout tournaments that carry a lot of prestige, but winning the league, you know, ending up with the best record in the league is revered and respected, and you know, in the in say Premier League, it's how you win the league. I'm not saying necessarily saying that has to happen, but I wish it wasn't the like a pat on the back, no, go win a title, and then this knockout tournament. And I think it does a disservice to quality teams like this Dodgers team and this Braves team that they're viewed unilaterally as failures.
That's fair. But I think also that has to do with our perception as opposed to how they actually are.
Yeah, you know, but I mean? Like, I mean, that's, I think they deserve more, you know, mass recognition of a somewhat successful season. And, you know, and that's something you and I have talked about a lot. And that's why I wish there was more recognition for different kinds of success. And that doesn't mean get rid of the playoffs. It doesn't mean make it so that it's impossible. The regular season winner has an utmost super advantage in the playoffs. Sure, I just because I like lower variants in general, I would love everything to be a 7-game series once you're in the NLDS. But the Dodgers were probably going to lose a 7-game series too. So if they kept playing like they were, so I don't know. Yeah, that's my rant. But I'll let you let me know what do you think, Eric?
Yeah. So the other thing was like so many people. I seem to forget that the playoffs have never been about determining the best team. You know, it's always been about having a tournament for like television ratings that produce a winner, you know, and that's it pretty much. Like ever since like, I guess what divisional play has come around. It's sort of been like that. Like literally, it's like, if you take it, the Braves example, right? They're not, and it's not, let's say Braves fans. I don't have a specific one in front of me, but if you're a Braves fan going like, oh, why, how did we lose this? It's not right that a 101 Braves win Braves team lost and they're sitting home right now while an 87 win Phillies team. Meanwhile, the Braves coming off an 88 win championship season. Like, so that in itself, right? Like, it's like a lot of the arguments, and it's not just Dodger stuff, but it seems like a lot of the arguments that were people like Joe Scarborough of all people, like, you know, he's like tweeting it. Like, it's like this is the first year they've ever watched the MLB playoffs, you know? And it's just, I don't know, it's weird.
And I get it that it's new playoff system and it produces this championship series. I get why, where that's coming from, but you're right. It's not necessarily a completely new facet of it. Although something you bring up is, you know, I was making the comparison to European soccer, but I remember growing up thinking like winning the pennant was having the best record in either the American National League carried a big deal.
Yep.
And, you know, yes, you were disappointed in October like the Dodgers were so often if you then lost to the Yankees. But it still was a really a tribute. And now it's this sort of afterthought. They still get the trophy and there's, you know, an MVP of the series. But it's still like, they'll go, you know, go win the final one. And that just bums me out.
So that in a way sort of gets me to another sort of, and I don't necessarily mean to pick on Dylan Hernandez specifically, because I don't think he was necessarily alone in this, but he, after the, on Tuesday, the Dodgers had a press conference with Andrew Friedman, Brandon Gomes, sort of end of season stuff, you know, just sort of dissecting the loss, starting the off season. And Dylan had a lot of questions in that. And full disclosure, I didn't go, I was sick. I stayed home and watched on TV. So Dylan Hernandez wrote a column saying that it's a problem that Andrew Friedman doesn't think that changes are needed. And to be fair, this is me inserting, Friedman did not necessarily say that. This is Dylan's interpretation. But then in the column, like Hernandez himself didn't really offer any other changes. It's just the line of his questioning, it seemed like a circular argument to me, is that, look, you've built like the best team in the regular season for, you know, X years running. But how do you do that for the postseason? And Friedman is like, you know, trying to say like, look, we sort of try for that, but like Friedman acknowledged that, you know, it's just not satisfactory to some people when you acknowledge that in a short season things can happen, or a short series, excuse me, things can happen, and that's like doesn't seem acceptable, like I guess to some.
And I mean, and to a degree, I get that just because, you know, in the playoffs 10 years in a row, only once as a wild card.
But are you
getting to the point where this is not just a statistical anomaly, or is there something to it? And I've commented on before that I have always thought that 2018 sort of like to me in the sort of analytical department of the Dodgers or whatever shifted up the priority of contact hit tool, and that was a thing that I like just reading between the lines, I thought got a lot of play, and they did, right? Clearly their priorities after that, but they got Mookie Betts, they got Trey Turner, and they got Freddie Freeman, three batters with a really good contact tool. And it didn't matter. They still went 0-for-20, and that kind of makes sense in the playoffs, right? Where you can't just get slap hitters, but the walks and home run is a little bit more volatile in a shorter series.
They did strike out more in the postseason than they did in the regular season, but that was a big thing, I think. But I think, I guess my point also is that.
But at this point, like, I don't know what else you could. And like you said, I'm waiting to hear, you know, what is that? I've heard, you know, arguments like, you can't rely on these reclamation projects as pitchers. But look what happened in the Mets. they had the most formative, scary 1-2 punch, and it didn't matter because things can happen in a short series. I don't know what you do either. I'd love to, like, to me, this is actually kind of an interesting problem for baseball analytics, is like, is there some sort of secret sauce that you can actually do that? Because you know what, the Dodgers would do it. It's not like they don't want to, or that they're punting on opportunities in order to just win the regular season. It's that, as far as I can tell, one translates to the other given enough chances, and you know, 1 out of 10 isn't to me a out of this world anomaly, especially when they got cheated in one of those years. I'm not so sure I understand. Yeah, I don't either. Siri
chiming in while watching the ALCS.
That was dictation, by the way, so I just checked my watch and it's just a giant paragraph of me ranting.
That's hilarious. and the other thing, it's like, you, I guess you, it's hard to, I think the the best way to build the best team in October is just to build the best team and hope the best players play well. And the Dodgers didn't. They just didn't, right? And so you have to like live with that. And that's the thing.
I also want to credit Freeman, as I believe I saw a tweet quoting him saying like, that's something they're going to look into. Why did we lose? Didn't say, no, we're fine. He in fact, I think said the opposite. He's like, yeah, we're going to try and figure this out. Is it major league scouting? Like, are they just getting like one-upped in these shorts? Like it could be, there are some things it could be, but we don't know what it is definitively. And I would love if, 10 years, 15 years from now, the Dodgers win a few more titles and, Freeman doesn't care anymore. And he spills the secret sauce. This is what we did to actually slightly improve our chances in October. So, that would be fascinating to me.
The other thing that, I guess it wasn't surprising in that anytime something like this happens, like it just has to be asked. But like I think Jack Harris reported first, maybe Fabian Ardaia after that.
Oh, yeah.
On Sunday was like, oh, Dave Roberts is going to be back. It's like, well. Yeah, he's under contract. Like, I guess I didn't know the bloodthirst was out there like that, enough to people. I mean, but I get it, right? People want like a scapegoat or something you have to show you're doing something to change, like, or whatever. But that's one thing that came out of the press conference. Friedman was steadfast in support of Dave Roberts. And then some of the other things were like the questions that are, they're basically 8 years old at this point. Like, does Dave Roberts have final say on things? Like, yeah, he makes the calls, right? Like during the games, like they obviously communicate, and like are equipped with like all sorts of information from various points in the front office and all that kind of stuff. But like this idea has persisted forever that like Friedman, it's one of those things where Roberts can't win either way. He's viewed as both an incompetent dunderhead by some, and also a puppet. Like, well, if he's not calling the moves, who's the dunderhead, right? Like, so I don't get it. Like that part is weird. But so he was very like supportive of him in that regard. He's very clearly going to be back. He's under contract for 3 more years, right? So like, I don't think that was much a question, but it had to be asked. So I'm not knocking the reporting or anything. The other sort of reaction, I think Bill Plaschke in one of his columns said, like, who is this year's Kirk Gibson? Like, just the 88 fetishization, man. Like, I can't even say it right now. I'm all screwed up. But, like, I don't know. Just I'm a little over that. Like, I would have thought that died with the 2020 title, but it has not. But I guess the one thing come out of it, Jesse Orosco could probably still get a batter or two out. So I think bring him to spring training as a non-roster invitee, have him pick someone in the like a veteran who they bring in this off season, and then put Eye Black in his hat and then see how it plays out. And maybe that's the secret for next year. I don't know.
So we made predictions if we want to talk about bad things.
Once again, we nailed it all. Like we just, our success rate is through the roof, as you might have guessed. As we're recording this, the AL Championship Series is being played. It's travel day for the National League side. And the National League, as we discussed, is Phillies Padres. And since both of us picked Dodgers Braves, well, whoops, we didn't get that quite right. You did have the Dodgers Padres winner in 4 games, so you get
nailed that, it.
I think I had the Braves Phillies winner in 4 games, so we split this one in my view. In the Dodgers Padres NLDS, I went low on the runs, 23 runs. I must have foreseen the Dodgers struggle with runners in scoring position, but you said 28 and it was 27, so you get that one. One of the questions from Craig was,
oh, no.
How many total Dodgers would score a run in the NLDS? Jacob said 9. I said 8. We were way off. It was 6. Trey Turner scored 4 times. Mookie Betts, Max Muncy, Will Smith scored twice each. Freddie Freeman and Trace Thompson scored once. So that's what, when you score 12 runs in 4 games, it's rarely good. On the AL side, we both had Astros over Mariners. But naturally, we were found a way to be wrong in that too. I said four games. You said five. It was three. However, game three was 18 innings. So I think I'm taking that one. I think
that's fair.
The equivalent of four games. The one difference where the one pick where we differed was Yankees Guardians, which because of two rain delays or rain outs, needed 8 days to finish. I had the Guardians in four. Jacob had the Yankees in three. So you get the Yankees part right, but it was in five games. So
I think the team carries larger weight. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, no, you get that one for sure. But like, I just thought it was funny. But so back to the Dodgers, Padres, NLDS. Freddie Freeman stole a base in game four. He's the eighth Dodgers first baseman to steal a base in a postseason game. Which Dodgers first baseman has the most postseason steals in franchise history? And as a bonus, name the other seven stealing first basemen besides Freeman.
Speedsters. Real quick before you go to break, I did one. This may get wondered. It's a big offseason coming up for the Dodgers. I think maybe the biggest since Freeman took over, or since they kind of clean slate and started their franchise. It's the first biggest in a while, I think.
You could argue that after 2019 was bigger because they didn't they went for Cole. They weren't as much in Rendon as you would have thought.
I feel like they have more. Oh, this is actually a hole than before.
That's fair. Fair.
We're aware of that. But we are going to wait till either after the World Series is done or closer to it to talk about.
Basically, that week. That's when we're going to record next and do like a sort of off season preview podcast. But that's for later. Right now,
fast first baseman, and I'll answer try to answer after this. Who has the most postseason steals for a Dodger first baseman?
Mm-hmm.
And can I name every first baseman who's stolen a base? Yeah. So no, but I'm gonna how about play the numbers game, Garvey.
So Garvey is tied for second with two. he stole them in 1977 and
1978. Oh, yeah. No. All right. Before the perma swap to outfield, Bellinger?
Bellinger is number one. He has five. Now, in his career, he has 14 steals and only one caught stealing in 69 games in the postseason. Five of those came while playing first base.
Okay. So I need someone else that has two.
one, two, three. So Freeman, Bellinger, and two others are firmly in the Jacob era.
Don't say that. Karras.
No. I'll go even further. They played under Dave Roberts.
Don't say it. Max Muncy?
Max Muncy is tied for second with two.
noted speedster.
He did that in 2018 and 2019. I will say the other two people with two steals are older.
Okay.
There's two others with one as well.
Okay.
One of the ones are Dave Roberts era.
Hello, Adrian Gonzalez.
Adrian Gonzalez in 2016.
Another noted speedster.
That's right. So the other three that we don't have so far, two are Hall of Famers who played primarily in Brooklyn.
Gil Hodges.
Yes, Gil Hodges has one. The other one played solely in Brooklyn, the other Hall of Famer, that is.
Why are you doing this to me?
I'll give you another hint for this player. He played a lot of positions.
Jackie?
Yep. Okay. He had two. There's one other. My hint for you is he's a switch hitter.
That doesn't help. I don't know. Give me.
He hit for the cycle, not in this year that he stole bases in the postseason, but
the O dog. Sorry. No, tapping out.
Wes Parker, 1965.
Okay. This is, I think, second episode in a row. Like, Wes Parker has just eluded my brain.
I should have said Brady Bunch. That would have nailed it. You would have got it.
Hey, I did okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's my? No, I agree with you. You're, no, yeah. I'm sorry. That
yeah,
that
was, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I
you deserve more
like, than that. Yeah. All right. Hey, I need to turn the tables because it's time for
With Jens and Craig. We love them.
You are going to be shocked
we by love the it.
Questions oh, Craig has from you. You haven't heard any idea about it whatsoever. We didn't just record this some of this.
Definitely isn't our second take of the segment.
This week, at least we did get to it before you started answering questions, because that would That's be fair. Like, oh, oh no, be... whoa.
Yeah.
This week's trivia will be questions about the last four World Series clinching games for the Dodgers. There, I got through the question about my computer shutting off. Can Eric name the winning pitcher, the player who drove in the winning run, and if there was a save, who recorded it?
All right.
So do you want to go more recent to
I'll go in order.
Okay.
So 1965 was game 7 in Minnesota. Sandy Koufax 2 days rest pitched 2-hit shutout.
Who got the save?
So yeah. So this is the hang up. I'm going to say Lou Johnson, but I don't the game was 2-0 and I don't remember if he just widened a 1-0 lead with a solo home run, or he drove in both runs, or the first run. But I can only think of Lou Johnson in this area.
It is Lou Johnson. I'm going to answer your specific question. He broke the 0-0 tie, and then Wes Parker hit a single scoring
also,
Ron Fairley.
Also stole 2 bases in that series, as we just talked about. Okay, so 1981. Oh, God. I'll start with what I know. Steve Howe, 3 2/3 inning save.
Why do you know that?
It's 3-inning save. Come on, no, but so that game, I think it was either 9-1 or 9-2. So they got the lead early. So I think it was Bert Hooten got the win.
You were correct.
And so it was tri MVPs. It's one of two people I'm thinking of who could have got this quote unquote game winning RBI. But I think because he had I think he drove in 3 in the game at least, I'm going to go with Pedro Guerrero.
It is not Pedro Guerrero.
Is it Ron Say?
It is.
Ah, okay. I couldn't remember who gave them the lead. And all right. So
well,
we
might as well stop here. You're a failure.
Yep.
No, you're doing great. 1988.
Which is 34 years ago today as we record on October 20th. Oral Hershiser, complete game, 5-2 win over the A's, so no save. Man. I know Mickey Hatcher homered. I'm going to just say Mickey Hatcher.
It is Mickey Hatcher.
Yeah, I think it was a 2-run homer in the first off Storm Davis.
You are correct.
Yeah.
Who scored the other run in that home run?
I think that was Steve Sachs.
It is not.
Franklin Stubbs?
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, final, 2020.
Embedded Franklin Stubbs second and Mickey Hatcher third, and they won in 5 games. That's the other thing, if you... there's your playoff format. Just do that. So 2020, Julio Urias, 7-batter save. This was weird because Tony Gonsolin started and was out by the second inning. They took the lead in the sixth when Blake Snell was pulled because it was a 1-0 game, I think. Possibly 2-0. No, it was 1-0. So the question is, who pitched the bottom of the fifth? So if I remember right, it was Dylan Floro, who used three changeups to get Randy Arozarena with the bases loaded to end the second. Alex Wood pitched two scoreless innings in there, two perfect innings, I think. I know Pedro Baez pitched. I'm pretty sure Victor Gonzalez pitched. I'm going to say Pedro Baez.
Pedro Baez pitched the top of the fifth, but not the final out, because Victor Gonzalez came in with two outs.
It was Victor Gonzalez. Okay. Dang. Nice.
But you did. Oh, wait. Game winning RBI.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. So that one.
Trying to skirt your duty.
Yeah. So Barnes single got Snell out. Wild pitch, Mookie Betts double. Wild pitch brought in the tying run. Corey Seager ground out, got the winning run. So Corey Seager.
There you go.
Yep.
Well done.
I am proud of myself. One way to end the season on a high note.
For the 23rd straight season, there will not be a repeat World Series champion. During that time, 15 different franchises have won a World Series, and there is an active streak of 8 different teams to win a title. Is there anything that can be taken from that as it relates to putting together a World Series winning team?
No. I believe it's only the 22nd because the Yankees won 98, 99, and 2000. So, but yeah, still a long time. I just think that it's really hard to win, especially now. Like, it's hard. Like, it's gotten progressively harder, right? There was a wild card team back in 2001, but it got you the same standing as a division winner because there was just everyone directly into the division series. So the wild card came about in 2012, and since then it added the extra dimension to it. And then obviously now there's more teams, so there's more. It's just like a longer stretch. And I just think that makes it more difficult. I mean, it's bound to happen, right? Someone is going to run off, like, but you just have to play well 2 Octobers in a row, right? It might sound easier said than done, but like, I think it's going to happen, but it's certainly harder just because of just the format, and just having to go through that long of a run. I mean, the Yankees went through same 3 rounds, right? So like that's not taking away from that. They had a tough run too, but I think it's just really hard to do that. And, you know, even I'm trying to think, like, before that, was the last repeat winner before those Yankees, the 77 and 78 Yankees? I think it was.
No, Blue Jays.
Yeah. But it just doesn't happen that often in general. So I just think it's just generally hard, and it becomes even more harder with, you know, 3+ rounds of postseason. So it's just tough.
Did the Dodgers suffer from taking an optimistic outlook on their pitchers recovering from various injuries in time for the postseason?
I think yes, and like, you know, and not. I think you have to say yes to this, and it's in a couple ways that should have been obvious, and maybe one way that wasn't. So like, obviously, so they traded Mitch White. Not that like anyone here is saying like, oh, if they had Mitch White, they would have won, right? But like, they traded Mitch White away to sort of create 40-man space, and he was like their number 6 at that time. But they were also just about to get Dustin May back. So I definitely think they put too much eggs in the Dustin May basket. May didn't pitch in the NLDS, although he was active. He was also shaky in his 6 starts, which is understandable because he's coming off Tommy John. It's a long time off. It's hard to get your sort of feel back. And like, that'll happen over time, but like, it just didn't happen. And I think them sort of counting on that probably came back to bite him a little bit. Now, Gonsolin was the one of the existing starters that got hurt and never really fully recovered. I mean, he was deemed healthy enough to pitch, but he wasn't nearly as effective as he was like all season. But I think I don't necessarily think you could say like they should have seen Gonsolin coming. But I think in a rotation that has Clayton Kershaw in it, you've got to think like that could happen. So like someone of the four was probably going to suffer some sort of injury, or just, you know, something. So that's tough. And then I sort of argued they needed to needed to trade for a starting pitcher because just to get them through the season and not because they were obviously already like had the division wrapped up at that point. But I think they thought, and to be fair, rightfully so, like Pepio and Grove sort of filled those innings to sort of just fill out those games. But I think had they sort of been more aggressive, and the other thing, like, is Pablo Lopez really moving the needles, right? Because he was the sort of guy they were after, I think. Maybe the one thing that sort of I think maybe rubbed Dylan the wrong way in his column was I think he was asked about doing a trade deadline deal, and Friedman said, like, I'm happy we didn't make a bad deal just to do a deal or whatever. And so I sort of get where the angst from that is coming from, right? Like, but yeah, like perhaps, like, you know, maybe they could have done something to sort of account for that. But yeah, it's just who knows? Like, but I do think definitely they were probably too optimistic in that regard.
Yeah, I think I agree. But again, like, I've always been like, if we knew for sure the kind of trade that might be occurring, what would the return have been? Were the Marlins asking for too much? And again, if it was a lot, you don't know that's going to guarantee. Obviously, you would make that trade if you could guarantee it changes sure. thing, but you can't make that guarantee. So,
yep.
Are either of you fans of horror suspense films? If so, is there a particular franchise you have seen a lot over the years?
I think obviously they're two different things, but I like suspense films just fine. I do not like horror films one bit. Most. I think my brain shuts off. Like, I don't like to go to that place. So I generally avoid almost all horror films. I guess like the Scream movies like count, even though they were, well, especially in the later movies, but they were, their whole thing is like being meta about horror movies. But that's about as much as I'll do. Like, I don't want to watch like the, I didn't see like Midsommar or, the
Hereditary.
You read it. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah. Like I don't enjoy that process. So I just avoid it.
I'll serve you up, Eric. My wife, is a huge fan, listens to the podcast Faculty of Horror all the time. I don't think I would say she has a favorite franchise unless we count strange foreign ones as a franchise. Sure. A big fan of those. I am not. If I have to watch one with her, I always read the Wikipedia article before I do. I don't want to be surprised. I want comfort if I'm gonna watch a movie, and those are not comforting to me. So yeah,
I'm a little baby, and I need to have my warm milk before going to bed. And no, I will say I do enjoy like terrible horror movies, if there's such a thing. So I remember there was a time, I think it was probably either in college or I think it was during college, like during the summers or whatever, me and a friend of mine, Scott, we would, he worked at a video store for one or two of those summers. So there were a lot of times where he would just bring home like one or two, like just wild movies or something. We'd watch it. Like, so, we watch, and my cousin too, we will watch it. So we watched Jack Frost, not the Michael Keaton movie. It was like
the Mystery Science Theater classic. No,
yeah,
not the Russian Finnish.
No. So yeah, which is just a terribly great movie. But that along, I think the people who made that, or at least it's in the same vein, they made a movie called Uncle Sam, which is just the same premise except literally a guy in an Uncle Sam costume is like doing the murdering. And so that's great. But yeah, like that's about my speed. That's about as far as I go. Otherwise, I can't really handle it.
All right. The final food question before we start talking off season. Traditionally, meatloaf is made from ground beef with a layer of tomato sauce, ketchup baked on top. Over the years, I have done it with ground turkey, sausage, and ground pork combinations. Is meatloaf something either of you make at home? And in either case, do you prefer it with the traditional dinner sides, mashed potatoes and veggies, or in a sandwich?
I've made it at home. You know, several is probably a strong word, but like enough, you know. I can't imagine myself eating a meatloaf sandwich. Or at least if I make it, like, I'm just going to have it like that, like as is. So I don't think it would be with a sandwich, but I think fair to say, like, either have it with rice or, you know, I don't really make mashed potatoes at home. I'm just like cooking for myself. It's like, find it a little too much, but maybe some sort of potato side, maybe, but like with something, I guess the times I make potatoes are usually if I'm making a roast and I just stick potatoes and carrots or something in the crock pot or the oven or whatever with it. The meatloaf is like in its own pan usually. So it's not the same. But yeah, like I like it. I don't remember ever doing it with pork. I think I've done it with a combination of beef and lamb. But mostly beef, some turkey quite a bit. I don't do a ton of the full like ketchup on top or whatever. I mean, I tend to include it in the mix and then just sort of get it out, that way. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm probably rambling right now, but yeah. What about you?
I really do not like meatloaf. Mm. Had a lot as a kid. Liked it as a kid, but just has not stayed the course. I have had one meatloaf that I liked a lot. It was a restaurant in Tulsa, actually. And yep. It was half ground beef, half chorizo, and on a pile of polenta. And that was really, really, really good. But it's the only time I can say that that's been the case.
Yeah. Look, man. I kind of want to make meatloaf.
Yeah, luckily I don't. Although I'm hungry, so I don't know when I'm gonna.
Yeah, I mean, not right now. I'm not gonna go make meatloaf right now because that's a long process. But I mean, relatively. But no, I think that's as good a way to end the season, as it were, as any. But we'll be back in a couple weeks with a sort of off-season preview, but. That's it for the 2022 Dodgers season. Thank you for listening to the lineup and to Leading Off, which we introduced a few months back. Thanks for listening to all of it. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.